Do you feel like you keep on doing more but are never doing enough? Do you feel guilty when you take time off? You may be experiencing what's called productivity anxiety. And that's what we're going to talk about today on What's Up with Dr. Jed on Your Life in Process. Welcome back. This is the last episode of season one of Your Life in Process. We've covered a lot of things together in the last 17 episodes. We started off talking about psychological flexibility and values. We've explored dopamine and how to find more balance in your craving mind. We've also looked at parenting, how to help your kids become intuitive eaters and prevent parental burnout. And we've looked at ways to improve your life through things like digital detoxes, meditation, what to do about our egos, and how to find more balance in an integrative way with our bodies. This season has been wonderful, and it's also been a lot of work. So that's why I am taking a break. I am practicing what I preach and trying to live more seasonally with my work and in my life. When I practice yoga at the end of the session, I always do a shavasana, which is corpse pose. And the purpose of corpse pose is twofold. First is really to allow your body to integrate the movement that you've just done as you are still. There's a lot that happens in that rest in terms of restoration of the physical body. Corpse pose is also a death pose. As Patabi Joyce calls it, it's practicing death a little bit every day. We practice these death poses because it's an opportunity to make contact with the impermanence of things. So by living more seasonally and in the rhythm of your own body, pushing hard, being engaged, going full throttle at things that matter to you, but equally valuing downtime and restoration, you'll be able to sustain your values-based action as well as learn from it. So it's important to pause and integrate what you've learned. I'm going to be taking 3 weeks off and going on retreat in Costa Rica. I'm going to be leading a group of people there. During this time, I encourage you to really download what we've learned here. And don't forget that you can find the practices in the show notes so that you can apply them. They're listed by topic. So today's podcast with Dr. Jed is just about that. It's about looking at our productivity in a different way. What's driving it? What's the anxiety underneath it? What kind of cycles of avoidance are we caught in, and how can we do something differently? Dr. Jed has been a frequent contributor to this podcast, and he's the author of Unwinding Anxiety and the Craving Mind, which we talk about on the show today. He's also a neuroscientist and clinical research professor at Brown University. I first talked to Dr. Jed about this concept of striving on my summit, From Striving to Thriving, and you can watch that summit for free at fromstrivingtothriving.com. I wanted to take a little bit further today into exploring what drives our productivity anxiety. And at the end of today's conversation, as always, I will give you some concrete strategies that you can use to unwind your productivity anxiety so that you can have more choice around where you place your energy and when and how you do it. Maybe some of these strategies will be helpful for you in taking a little bit of a rest as well. As many of you know, I have been a longtime meditation and mindfulness practitioner. It's really important to me, and that is why it's such an honor for me to be a teacher at Inside LA. I am going to have a workshop for all of you on values on Friday, April 8th. And what's great about these workshops is that they're really accessible to the general public. They're only $35 for an hour and a half live workshop in ACT. Inside LA not only offers workshops, it also offers meditation, instruction, and group meditation. When we learn meditation in community, when we learn from experienced teachers, we're better able to maintain our practice and continue to grow. Inside LA is a nonprofit meditation community providing high-quality mindfulness and compassion practices for over 20 years. They offer classes, retreats, and special events that cater both to beginning meditators and to those looking to deepen and sustain their practice. Learn more about Inside LA and my upcoming workshops. Become part of this beautiful community at insidela.org/Dr. Diana Hill. And the link is in the show notes. Okay, good to have you back, Dr. Jed. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And today we wanted to talk about productivity anxiety, sort of under the bigger umbrella of striving. We've talked about this before on a summit that we did together, but I like the concept of productivity anxiety in particular, because one of the things that I see a lot in my life and in my practice is that folks are saying they don't have enough time to get everything done, even though they're more efficient than they've ever been. We can get things done more quickly than we've ever been done. And then the flip side of that is that when people have a moment of free time, they feel guilty and uneasy. And this feeling of like, I should be doing something right now. Caught in this productivity anxiety. And that term, actually, I first learned from Rupi Kaur, who's a poet. And she wrote this beautiful poem called Productivity Anxiety. She says, I have this productivity anxiety that everyone else is working harder than me, and I'm going to be left behind because I'm not working fast enough, long enough, and I'm wasting my time. So I want to talk all about all the things that she's missing out on because of this productivity anxiety.
Yeah. Do you want to start with where it comes from?
Sure.
Well, what I hear even in that poem, but I think we can probably all map out for any of us that can relate to the poem, is that, you know, there's this, we have this carrot dangling in front of us, whatever that carrot is, you know, whatever the getting ahead in life is, whether it's at work, whether it's, you know, family, health, you name it. And so we can lump all of that under the carrot, or the, you know, the proverbial reward that keeps getting dangled in front of our faces. And then, you know, maybe we have a good day and we're really productive, you know, whatever that looks like. We, you know, get a bunch written if we're writing a paper or a book, or we, you know, we get a project done, or we just really feel like things are singing. And if we trace that backwards, you know, of course, I see the world through the lens of reinforcement learning. You know, we can look at the behavior and how rewarding it is. And then we can see what might trigger that the next day. So the next day we get up and we remember, wow, we had a really productive day, felt great. You know, there's the reward. And then we say, okay, do it again. You know, but we can't just like snap our fingers and suddenly be productive. I think we can find all the ways to maximize productivity and kind of get in the flow. But I think this is where the irony comes in, that the more we try to be productive, the more anxious we get about it. You know, it's that performance, you know, that performance anxiety, in terms of like, we get anxious because we feel like we need to perform, which is different than feeling like we have to be anxious to perform well. It's the, you know, it's just the anxiety of the anticipation of like trying to do something, which makes us not perform well. And then we get stuck in these vicious cycles. So that's the first piece that I would kind of highlight or throw out there maybe for conversation. Does that fit with what you see in terms of some of the drivers for this?
Yeah. I mean, I see productivity anxiety is driven both by that positive reinforcement of getting the praise or the follower or the project done or the more money or whatever it is, that getting your Instacart delivery quickly, right? The positive reinforcement. But I also really think that there's another driving force of negative reinforcement, of experiential avoidance. Mm. And that's the difficulty with downtime that people have, that sort of uneasiness, the guilt. And when that shows up for folks, or just even just discomfort with boredom, we go into drive and doing. And, you know, I think there's a behavioral component to it. There's also such a social cultural component to productivity, or even, you know, capitalism and our understanding of what is productivity, because I think that's really changed, you know, sort of over time. What does it mean to be productive? Certainly a hunter-gatherer or a farmer had a very different perception of productivity than we do now.
Yes. You know, reading, was it, I think it was Hariri, was it his book on, it's called Sapiens, is mm-hmm. that right? Or am I mixing up the authors?
Yeah, Harari.
Harari. He was talking, if I remember correctly, he wrote about how, you know, hunter-gatherers actually had a pretty darn good life because they weren't working 16 hours a day. They hunted, they gathered, and they rested. And we've kind of gotten ourselves in modern day. We think that just because things are modern, that therefore we must have made progress. But he makes this argument that we need to rethink that. You know, it's just because we're working long hours, working hard, doesn't mean that we're living better lives. And in fact, we're often, you know, literally working ourselves to exhaustion. So I agree with that. That makes a lot of sense that if we don't step back and ask ourselves, what am I doing and what's driving me to do this, we could just get stuck in this, you know, the proverbial hedonic treadmill for our entire lives.
And what's our definition of productivity, I think, is a big part of it. Basically, this sort of like fixation on hitting targets and what are the targets that we're trying to hit.
So what would you say, you know, what would you say you see as one of the big, you know, where do people get stuck in circles these days with that productivity? Where do we get sucked in?
There's a lot of different things. I think one, people not feeling satisfied when they've actually accomplished something that's worth feeling satisfied about. You know, the sort of moving finish line that can happen for folks. As soon as you get there, you don't actually experience the goodness of getting there. You just move it out in front of you. Another thing is the never-ending task lists that people have and the real difficulty with being able to sort of the concept of rocks in a jar. Like you can only fit so many rocks in a jar. Our time is limited, but people are trying to squeeze so much into their day and then feel guilty that they're not fitting enough in. And not able to recognize that we have to make choices around what rocks we're going to put in the jar, what are the most important ones, and that you will never be able to fit everything in. And that we need some space between the rocks as well. Like just jamming everything in leads to dissatisfaction. So I would say those two things. Number one would be not feeling a sense of completion or competency or mastery as you are doing things in your life. And then number two is always feeling like you're never doing enough. There's always more coming down, you know, sort of the Lucille Ball chocolate. So many chocolates coming at you and you're like stuffing them in your mouth and in your pockets to get through the day.
Yes. Well, it reminds me of this quote. Somebody asked John D. Rockefeller, you know, I think at the time he was if not one of the richest people in the world. And they said, you know, how much is enough? And he said, just a little bit more. Yeah. You know, so it's like, that's what that image of the rocks makes me think of. You know, he couldn't possibly be happier by getting more money. And in fact, you could argue that he was less happy by trying to get more money, you know, because his money quotient, you know, for happiness was saturated at that point. He didn't need more, but that's that drive, you know, just a little bit more if we're not paying attention. And then even looking at, you know, do I want these rocks in my jar in the first place? You know, so like you're pointing out, the space between the rocks might actually be as valuable or even more valuable than just collecting more rocks. You know, it's, I wonder what you think. This made me think of this, you know, where we often get stuck going after the destination. You know, it's like check all the things off of my list and then I'll be happy, as compared to looking at the journey itself, where, you know, I'm probably stretching the metaphor a little bit far, but looking to see how rewarding or valuable the more accomplished we feel in the moment that we're in the journey. That's that space between the rocks, as compared to just trying to get more rocks.
Yeah. You know, I have a confession to make around that.
Okay.
Where I was at this retreat. I think I told you that I wasn't going on it, but I ended up being able to go on this amazing retreat to Costa Rica. And there were all these versions of rocks in the jar, people there. So super well-known people in the wellness world. Let's just say that. I won't disclose any names, but a lot of them were there. And I showed up and I had this feeling of craving to put rocks in my jar in the sense of, I want to go talk to this person and I want to go learn from this person. And I got so anxious while I was there of trying to seek out what my version, for me, these are my versions of rocks in my jar, right? That I actually missed out on opportunities to just be in this experience, right? And one of the things that happened for me is I sat down with Stefan Reichshaven, who founded the Retreat Center, and he wrote this book called Time Shifting, which is all about how to slow down and be in your life, basically. And he gave me this advice, which was basically stop trying so hard. Just be here, Diana. Like, enjoy being here. Be on retreat with amazing people rather than trying to capture them. And I think that we all have that, you know, we can get hooked by that. And I know that's my version of that. For somebody else, it's something like money, or it's a body shape that they're trying to achieve, or it's followers in some, you know, Twitter or Instagram. We can all get hooked. And I think the question is that really like what it feels like when we're in that cycle of striving or productivity, anxiety, or whatever it is it, driving it? Is it really satisfying? It feels so hungry. And so ungrounded to be there.
Hungry. Yeah, it reminds me of the, you know, the image of the hungry ghost in Buddhism, where there's this ghost with a long, long, narrow esophagus and a huge stomach. And so we can picture that, you know, if this ghost is hungry, it tries to eat and tries to eat and tries to eat and tries to fill its stomach. But because of its anatomy, it can never do it. It's never full. That hungry ghost. So it's like, boy, that's, you know, if that doesn't lead to productivity anxiety, I don't know what does. You know, just wanting and wanting and wanting more.
What about for you?
Well, certainly, you know, I'm just feeling into my experience around just the, you know, being, you know, doing things, you know, like working, for example, writing something, and how not only does it feel good, you know, we think of the journey, but also the aim is to have something that's helpful for the world. Otherwise, I'm wasting my time. And so I can look at that as the destination. And if I get focused on, boy, this has to be good, you know, I'm, let's say writing a book, and I hope people get it, and I hope this helps the world, and I hope, you know, I don't get some goofball Amazon review or whatever, you know, whatever my metric is for success. If I focus there, I can't write very well. And it doesn't feel very good at all. Like you're saying, it's hungry. And that hunger gets in the way of the satisfaction of, you know, of the process of eating itself, if we think of writing as eating.
Yeah, I remember in your Unwinding Anxiety book, how you write about the Amazon review that kind of sparked you to write this book, you know? And I've wondered about that for you. I was like, is that productivity anxiety that he's trying to, you know, overwrite something that was really painful for you? Or is that really just like values based of, I want to write a book that is helpful for people in a different way than, you know, The Craving Mind? It was amazing and beautiful, and Unwinding Anxiety is like the roadmap of how to do it, right? So maybe it's a little bit of both sometimes.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I'm honest with myself, there are probably a number of components. Certainly, you know, it's an ego blow where, you know, I wrote The Craving Mind and I was thinking, yeah, here's the map and here's the compass and people can navigate the territory themselves. And then, you know, Amazon Addict was like, I've taken neuroscience courses. You know, this book, you know, said something like, oh, he seems like he wants to help people, but he's not providing, you know, basically the cookbook. And so, you know, my ego's like, but you are the cookbook. And then there's a piece in there that says, yeah, she's got a really good point. And I know it's a she because I kind of tried to stalk her on Amazon. I write about this at the end of the book. I try to stalk her a little bit to try to, like, who is this person? Telling a neuroscientist that they're not doing, you know, the right thing with neuroscience or whatever. And so the other, when I could let that ego piece go, it was a really great fire that she lit under my butt to say, yeah, you've got a really good point here. I do need to make something a little more pragmatic, write something a little more pragmatic. And I wasn't ready to write that book back when I wrote The Craving Mind, but I was, I don't know, three, four years later, whenever I wrote Unwinding Anxiety. And it just, you know, the conditions had to come together for that. And I needed to get out of my own way. You know, if I just sat there and shook my fist and said, you don't understand me. The Craving Mind is the best book I've ever written. I'll never write another one. And instead saying, you know, that could help light a fire under my butt to write another book.
Yeah. And that feels much more values-based to me of like, that's the doing, that's being in the journey, but then also seeing where you're going because it's something that's important to you, as opposed to just going at it because you're hungry for more. Mm-hmm. And it's not really connected to something that is intrinsically motivating, important, of value to you personally, and also, you know, of service to the world. So it feels different when you're in that kind of drive. It's a different kind of drive.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm curious what you think about where ego fits within the values-based system. You know, to me, it's not part of values. You know, it's just focusing on self.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Joseph Sirochi, he's like a major ACT guy that I love. He's a lot of research in the arena of ACT, and he did a talk on ego at the ACBS Worldcon last year, and attachment. And one of the things that he said is, or he has sort of described it, is in ACT, there's a process called self as content versus self as context. So when you're caught up in self as content, you are caught up in the I am. So like, you know, I am a neuroscientist and therefore you cannot challenge my book, right? Or I am a wellness person and therefore you have to like me because you're a wellness person too, or whatever it is, you know, or I am. And then self as context recognizes that we're much more contextual, you know, like sometimes I show up as my wellness person self, but not last night when I was like, you know, before bed and it was on my phone, you know, so that we're much more contextual beings than that sort of ego self. And what Joseph Sirochi talks about is sort of that when we're in that selfing, that ego selfing, we use self as either a prize, like to hold ourselves up as better than, or that positive reinforcement, or we use the self as a shield to protect ourselves. So the negative reinforcement to protect ourselves from that feeling of vulnerability or insecurity or that not enoughness, which I think also drives a lot of our productivity anxiety. If I'm not doing something or I'm not producing, then what is my worth? And that selfish shield can come in to kind of protect us from that.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
Okay, so we've talked about some of the causes of this productivity anxiety, and we didn't even tap into capitalism and our individualistic culture and our schooling systems, which, you know, as Anna Lemke talks about nature, nurture, and neighborhood, right? So we have like nature, our biology, we have the nurture of the system we live in, and the neighborhood of we can be productive 24 hours a day now. But what about some solutions, some ideas, some different ways of being in the journey than being caught in the cycle of it?
Well, I would say, you know, if you go back to the reinforcement learning piece, the most important component there is how rewarding something is. And so you described it so nicely, that hunger, you know, if the reward is hunger for more and we don't pay attention to that, we're just going to get stuck in that cycle. So I think the first thing I would say is just bringing some awareness in and noticing, you know, how rewarding it is when we are constantly trying to check off that to-do list, or when we're, you know, constantly anxious, trying to be well with all the wellness people.
It's so ugly, Dr. Jed. I'm like exposing my ugly side here in the service of helping others.
Yeah. Vulnerability is strength, 100% there. So that's the first thing I would say. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Yeah. Awareness that we're caught in the cycle of it, and how satisfying or dissatisfying is it? Sort of the checking in on that. And that's sort of what's driving the cycle. Like, what is the cue? Mm-hmm. There's going to be certain cues that trigger us into that productivity mode. And sometimes there are things like social comparison or not good enough feelings, or, you know, just everyone has their flavor. But yeah, what is the behavior, but really focusing on the consequence. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Another thing that comes to mind is, goes back to this destination versus journey. You know, destination tends to be, you know, when we get there, we're satisfied, you know, at least for the time being, until we want to go somewhere else. And so it's kind of like this drive, this hunger that says, go, 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 go. Okay, now you got there. Now where else are we going to go? You know, and it can induce some anxiety when we're like, okay, I'm here. Now what? Where, you know, what's next? So here, if we're focused on the journey, and the joy that comes from the journey itself, we may be less likely to be sucked into those destination cycles where it's, you know, this, now this, now this, now this. You probably know people that go on holiday and they, you know, they visit a, you know, a new country or a new part of the world, and they've got this full itinerary of go, 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 go. You know, I have to visit every site in this city and then get to the next city. And then, you know, just reading their itinerary makes me exhausted. I can't imagine what it's like to actually do that. So if it's the destination mindset, you know, and then it's like, wow, how was that? Well, I didn't have time to actually reflect on it. If we take a moment and just look at how the journey itself can be as, if not more rewarding, it might help us, going back to your point about values, it might help us shift our values toward the toward the journey as compared to the destination.
Yeah, I think it's seeing the destination and the journey, right? Like that it's in my family, my husband's Italian, and they'll start talking about what they're having for dinner at lunch. You know, and then you're eating dinner and they're talking about what's going on for dessert, right? And it's like, wait a minute, hold on. Can we just be in the lunch before we move on to dinner? And, but that's also part of it is what I'm trying to do more of, and this actually is like hard to do, but is savoring the feelings of completion in the here and now. Mm-hmm. Like, rather than having my to-do list, having a what did I complete today list. And it's different. So like a to-do list is this never ending. It will never, there's always more. There is laundry being dirtied as I speak when my children are at school, right? So there, it's never going to end. But my completion list, when my completion list lines up with my values, I can say things like, wow, I was really present when my kids walked in the door from school today. And that's on my values list of something that I want to be growing in my life, is being more present with my family. Or I took a break at lunch and I did some movement. I can put that on my completion list. So those types of things that aren't productive in anyone else's eyes, but for me feel like a sense of being in the journey of my life and is satisfying. And at the end of my life, when I look back on it, will probably be the things that felt the most meaningful to me than like writing enough blog posts and newsletters. Painful. Yeah. Okay. So being in the journey, any other tips as we wind up this session on productivity anxiety?
Well, and I would say just zooming in on both the journey and bringing that together with the reward, you know, how does it feel? You know, can we look at the qualitative difference between, say, the journey and the destination, and see, you know, is there one that has that electric driven quality to it? And is there one that helps us find that space between the rocks where there's just an ease in the doing? So kind of being with ourselves, being in the experience, like you're talking about, being present. How does that feel itself? So that's the one other thing I would say to help, you know, kind of concretize that. Like, how can we make this pragmatic for anyone that wants to explore this themselves?
And especially that Amazon reviewer, because that's what she wants. What are the three steps, Judd?
Right.
Which in itself is productivity anxiety, right? We need everything to be boiled down to three steps for us, but that's good. Yeah. Great. Okay. Well, thank you. I think that this is helpful for folks that are starting to just, I don't know, like we can look at our lives a little bit differently, maybe than the way that we've been, we've just kind of all gotten caught up in this wave of doing more, but feeling like we're not doing enough. Mm-hmm. And that's just a really unhappy place to be in. So hopefully this will shift some people's ideas around it as well. So thank you.
Yes, may it be so.
In this episode, we talked about how to be in the journey of your life rather than so focused on the destination. And part of that is awareness, noticing when you are caught up in this type of productivity anxiety, shifting your energy and your attention and your behavior to something that is more satisfying. If you've read A Liberated Mind by Stephen Hayes, you'll see that it walks you through these six core processes of ACT that we've been talking about on the show. Being present, practicing acceptance, knowing your values, diffusing your thoughts, stepping back from your self stories, and taking committed action towards your values. But there's also something else in Stephen Hayes' work and ACT that I think is really linked to our productivity anxiety and our striving. And that is what he calls our core yearnings that all humans have that can get misdirected. And when we're looking at something like productivity anxiety, I think a part of that is that our core yearnings have gone sideways. So for example, we all have a core yearning to belong, not just to fit in, but actually to have a sense of I belong here. I matter. I am part of this. And when we are caught in productivity anxiety, sometimes we're striving so hard to fit in. We're doing so much to keep up with the Joneses and belong. We forget that we already do belong. We are already good and we are already enough. So the first practice that I want you to do this week to help you with your productivity anxiety is to recognize and download that your worth is not dependent upon what you do. You are worthy as you are. Sometimes I'll do a short mantra of just, I have done enough, I have enough, I am enough. A second core yearning is that we have a yearning to have a sense of orientation in the world. Often when we're in productivity anxiety, we're forward moving. We're never in the present moment. We're always thinking about the next moment. And this yearning for orientation can send us out into the future, trying to get someplace that we're supposed to go. So the second practice that I want you to do is to practice being in the here and now in your life. Orienting yourself in the now, in the journey, as Dr. Judd would say, not just the destination. And the way that you can practice that is by starting up a mindfulness practice. You can try out my one eye in and one eye out practice on Insight Timer. I have a nice little 10-minute mindfulness practice there. Or just paying attention to breath inside of your body, landing you in the here and now. The third yearning that I want to talk about with productivity anxiety has to do with a yearning for competence. We all have a yearning for mastery, to feel like we are growing and we are learning and we are achieving things. That is wonderful. And it's human to have this yearning for competence, but it can get misdirected too when we're caught up in productivity anxiety and unhealthy forms of striving. Because we get so focused on our task list and to-dos and trying to achieve, we don't take rests, which actually could impair our performance. Or we keep on moving our finish line out and we never feel a sense that we've gotten anywhere or we've accomplished anything. So the third practice I would like for you to do this week has to do with acknowledging and feeling a sense of competence, those rocks in your jar, paying attention to the times when you have completed tasks that are aligned with your values. You've taken that task and you've put it into your jar so that you have a bit of a completion list as opposed to a to-do list. What have you put in your jar today that gives you a sense of mastery and competence and a feeling that you are lining up your life with the type of person you want to be in the world? Sometimes those things are not always what other people would applaud you for, and some of them are quite simple. So those are your three tasks. One, cultivate a sense of belonging and worth independent of your achievements. Two, be present here and now. And three, acknowledge the mastery that you build as you build it, the completion and the competence. Let's do these things together over the next few weeks. I look forward to seeing you when we come back. I'm going to drop a little bonus episode, I think, tomorrow, and I'll let you know a sneak peek of who's going to be on the air and a few more tips about rest. And thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking your time with me here. It's been a lot of work and really worthwhile. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Your Life in Process. When you enter your life in process, when you become psychologically flexible, you become free. If you like this episode or think it would be helpful to somebody, please leave a review over at podchaser.com. And if you have any questions, you can leave them for me by phone at 805-457-2776 or send me a voicemail by email at podcast@yourlifeinprocess.com. I want to thank my team, Craig, Angela Stubbs, Ashley Hyatt, Abby Deal, and thank you to Ben Gold at Bell & Branch for his original music. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only, and it's not meant to be a substitute for mental health treatment.